the trees, a potential snare. Close my eyes and block my ears. Cut the cord and leave me here.
Ryan Nanny, welcome back to Phantom Island, presented and or brought to you by our friends at Homefield.
Thanks.
Every great Phantom Island throughout the years starts with a question. And sometimes you let me ask the question first.
Yeah. I'm nervous about this one, but
why?
Go ahead. Just go ahead.
Did Phil Fulmer do 9/11?
Okay. All right. All right.
We're in a post-truth era, and that's my truth.
All right.
Do you want me to immediately clarify what I'm saying and not even let the joke walk for a minute, or...
This is, you know what? You're driving the car. You tell me if we're staying on the road or just veering off.
I'm driving the car a little bit, but I'm also not, because today we are talking about not only your alma mater, the University of Florida football playing Gators. We are also talking about a time, we're talking about an instance in which you were enrolled as an undergrad at Florida.
I was a freshman
so
at Florida.
So you're sort of also the expert on the show. So I'm driving this, and I wanted to do this episode because... You are so normally even keeled about your sports fandom and your Florida fandom. And like this one, you kind of chirped up one day when this topic came up when we were deciding on Phantom Islands. And you were like, Phil Fulmer did 9/11. He was there.
I don't think you should
be. He entered through Lebanon.
All right. All right. Hold on.
So here's the deal.
Yeah.
We are, I guess I'm somewhat qualified to chirp in on this because I was also in college, shockingly, in the year 2001. It's funny because this episode is going to be received, I think, in two different camps. And that is people who remember the life adjustments, the sort of the calendar hiccups and the general weird existential feeling of 9/11. And there's also going to be the second camp of people
who are 26.
Well, yeah. And people who can only route that type of experience through what happened in 2020 during the pandemic, during COVID-19.
Yeah.
Because a lot of what we're going to talk about today, if you weren't alive or didn't have, you know, or weren't cognizant or really, you know, going to college in this time period, it's going to feel and sound a lot like 2020 in a small...
In certain ways.
Weird way.
Yeah, sure. So let's go behind the curtain briefly here. A lot of times on this show... We try to take questions that we have, bat them around, come to partial answers, theories, have an interesting conversation about a thing that is vexing both of us. I will just in case anyone's listening to this of who would take issue. I'm going to go ahead and say no. Phil Fulmer was not a participant in the attacks of September 11th.
We can't confirm that.
To my knowledge, and I have no belief to the contrary,
Phil Fulmer was in no way involved. We can neither confirm or deny.
Okay. I guess...
Don't deal in absolutes.
So I guess what I'm saying is this is going to be a little different in format today because it's less about that we're going to bat around and more about just telling a story. Just talking about a weird time.
Fine. I'll do the real thing. Did 9/11...
Is 9/11 the reason that Florida didn't win the national championship?
Well,
you
want
to do it that way?
No, because I'm going to go ahead and jump to the very end of the spoiler.
Okay.
No, because Miami was a war machine from hell in 2001. But
Is 9/11 the reason Florida didn't play for the national championship?
There we go.
We'll take
that.
There
we go.
Okay.
I'm also curious, and there's no way to really sort of find this out on this episode, but this seems to be a thing that more... This isn't just your crackpot weird thing where you came in here and you were like, he worked with Hezbollah, and then... this is something that Florida fans have talked about because it involves... Here's the weird, cool thing that I wanted to talk about as we near towards... One, not only another college football season, but two, a college football season in which your Florida Gators, I think, are going to do fantastic.
Today we're talking about the past. We're not talking about the future because the future scares me.
You know what? It's so fun to seize upon your anxieties for a
change.
Thank
you. Yeah.
This episode features all three at the time. This episode features the three biggest Florida rivals of that era.
Yes.
There's the modifier that Georgia's not involved, and that's because Georgia was not nationally title relevant during this time.
No, Georgia wasn't even, to get you into this, this is a period of time which may sound very strange from the perspective we're looking at today. In the first 9 years that the SEC split into divisions and had a conference championship game, Florida or Tennessee won the East in every 9 of those years. Nobody else.
Yep.
It was always Florida or Tennessee, and it was usually Florida. For
it was usually week 3 or sometimes week 4 on the calendar.
Yes, like third weekend of September was tradition, like kind of where you could slot it.
And it was the biggest and most important regular season game for the SEC, no doubt, and usually college football. Among the most important.
Yes, I think the second
Florida,
part of
Tennessee.
That will get a lot of pushback on, which is fine. But yeah, in many ways, it was a in-season playoff game that decided who was going to win the East, who was going to like potentially win the SEC title, and who was in many years like, you know, 96 Florida plays for national championship, 95 Florida plays for national championship, 98 Tennessee plays for national championship. So like. And there are other years where you can sort of go back and look and be like, oh, these are teams that are consistently finishing top five, top 10, like are in the conversation.
Yeah.
And this being so early in the year makes it like a really interesting little crucible of like, you haven't had a lot of time to figure out who you are and what you're doing. And you also, we it has stakes almost immediately.
It's no, this game was, it used to be cited specifically by, you know, anti-playoff college football trads as like
a thing that would ruin.
This is a play-in game.
Yes.
This matters. The regular season matters so much in college football that you have to win this game in week 3.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to be considered for a national title. We've learned since that like that may not be the best thing for the sport if the loser is just sort of cast off immediately in the third week of September. That, you know, maybe we should try and find some value for the rest of the season if you lose one of these important games. But it's 2001. This game is on the schedule as it always is. Like you said, the winner is either competing directly for a national title or very close to it almost every year.
Yes.
They're in the conversation. So it does feel like a play-in. And it's really damn important. Both schools have national championships at this point.
Yes.
Phil Fulmer's legacy is basically cemented at Tennessee. Steve Spurrier's legacy is cemented at Florida. So we're at kind of the apex. Very soon it will be the nadir of this whole, maybe not Florida-Tennessee as a rivalry, but these individuals at this time, this particular season is about to draw to a close.
Yes. So let's talk about like why this is. So the very easy part, why are we talking about 9/11? 9/11 is the reason why the Florida-Tennessee game in 2001 doesn't occur on the weekend it's originally planned to, which would have been the weekend. I remember this clearly. 9/11 was on a Tuesday.
Yep.
That Saturday should have been Florida-Tennessee. Was postponed, as all college football and I think NFL games were.
So all sporting events in the United States the weekend following the attacks of 9/11 are suspended.
Yes.
Now, somewhat weird in hindsight, and again, I think this is where even I can't separate the COVID filter, is...
It was just the one weekend.
They were fine.
Yeah.
Whatever national security risk was deemed too high to have a sporting event.
4 days afterwards was...
11 was fine?
Well, yeah, right.
Did you have the conversations, and this is a very, like, very specific thing for Xennial, whatever we are, where you... Like local rumors were like they're gonna target, and it was always something somewhat near you.
The stadium was the thing.
Gainesville,
because Florida has
Al Qaeda was gonna hit.
Florida has a pretty large, a very large football stadium.
Yeah,
and I think it was tied into why they were postponing the games. It was like, oh well, you know, that could be a target. In retrospect is absurd.
You would go straight from the World Trade Center to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium.
That's right. Yes.
You know why?
Yes. It's the Twin Towers.
Spurrier threw the ball too much.
The Pentagon
and
in Gainesville, Florida.
I believe the doctrine of IS and Al Qaeda was that it's more of a run first philosophy.
We got to be careful how many 9/11 jokes you're going to make on this.
A bunch.
Okay.
Good. The other thing is ours was in Oxford. Ours was the Memphis Airport because. Okay. Also, that's the FedEx central nervous system
hub of
and
sorts.
They were going to cripple shipping. It was going to be part of like a logistic. It was, you know what it was? It was a lot of recycled Y2K.
Weird
theories about
true.
Like how Y2K was going to shut everything else down.
Right. Okay.
So let's go back to it's Tuesday. The attacks occur.
Yeah.
The nation is basically shut down by about noon Eastern on Tuesday. In the sports world, the move is to suspend everything. I believe. The first sporting event after 9/11 that takes place is a Braves-Mets game, because I watched it.
Yeah.
Most people's memory is of the president at that time, George W. Bush, throwing the
Yankees
pitch.
Yankees game, if I remember.
At a Yankees game.
Yeah.
And also in the playoffs and World Series that year, because the Diamondbacks beat the Yankees. But the very first thing that I can remember is a Mets-Braves game.
Okay.
I don't know if he threw the first pitch at that one or not, but I know he did one at a Yankees game.
Yeah.
It's been covered because he actually threw a pretty good pitch. College football, what we're talking about today, has to make an adjustment that they've really...
Until COVID. COVID isn't even... I would argue COVID is completely different.
And also, I want to point one other thing out before we go.
Yeah.
Between 9/11 and COVID, the other fun thing that's happening in our society and world is global warming slash an increase in severe weather events.
Yes, hurricane cancellations.
This is just personal memory here, and you're the Floridian, so you can probably inform me better, but... Between 9/11 and COVID and the games that are rearranged for 9/11 and then everything that happened in the 20 season, there are several Florida, LSU, you know,
Miami.
USF, Miami,
those
games that are moved, changed, you know, we're going to play it on a Tuesday night kind of deal.
Yeah.
That happens.
Florida State and Boise had a game that was moved.
Yeah, that happens in the inner, that happens in the space between.
Yes, where, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, and, but those are, the difference there is
but
that
I can't remember a game being rescheduled before 9/11.
I mean, if we want to go all the way back to like the Rose Bowl, they played at Duke during World War II.
Well, that was World War II.
That's
a different kind of thing. No, I'm saying in my lifetime. Maybe did Hurricane Andrew move anything for you guys?
I don't remember. Like, I was too young to really remember if that was the case.
I think I was five.
And I'm sure there is something out there somewhere where there, I bet there were instances where there were facilities problems.
Sure.
And a game had to be moved. Now, the other thing that makes this tricky is that this is a conference game, and I think if you had been talking about a non-conference game, and we have seen this, UCF was supposed to play Georgia Tech, I think the year before their undefeated season, or maybe the year of their undefeated season. That game got canceled because of weather, but they didn't make it up.
Yeah.
Because it was sort of like, well, it's a non-conference, we can't move any of our conference games, whatever. Florida and Tennessee is a conference game, needed to happen, like...
Well, it's an entire slate of games.
Yes, yes. And we're going to get into sort of like everything else that ends up happening here. So,
yes,
this is the reason why Florida ends up playing Tennessee in December of 2001 instead of mid-September of 2001.
Okay.
To give a little context here. You say Phil Fulmer's legacy was locked, but I would argue it wasn't totally.
I think Spurrier's was.
Yes. At this point, Phil Fulmer comes in the same year that the SEC East is formed. Steve Spurrier had been there at Florida a couple years before that. But Fulmer had only won two of the first nine meetings that he had been the head coach for against Florida.
Mm-hmm.
There's the whole Peyton Manning thing, that Peyton Manning never beat Florida in four attempts. This is, I think, a part of the reason why Danny Werfel won the Heisman and Peyton Manning never did.
Agreed.
And Tennessee hadn't won in Gainesville since 1971. That's the other thing, is that this was a series, and a lot of series were like this at the time, where, like, I feel like this has started to dip. But where it was played really mattered.
Yeah.
And the idea, this, it's really hard to explain to people who, like, maybe this doesn't resonate for the same way. Florida was such a dominant team at home under Steve Spurrier. They would go on the road and they would lose to Florida State, or they would lose to some SEC West opponent that they went out of state to play. They famously didn't play, like, interesting non-conference teams.
Oh, yeah.
At all, and certainly
ever.
Not out of state. But, like, the Swamp was a place to be defended. So that's sort of, like, the... And the last three games in this series, which was not true of the early part of, like, the Fulmer-Spurrier back and forth, had all been really close. It has a Tennessee win by three, a Florida win by two, and a Florida win by four. So there's just a ton of juice coming into this. But, as we said, this game is being played in December instead of September, which also means that you don't have it changes the emotional impact of it, because it's not, oh, this is going to set the tone for the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that decides at this point who's going to play in the SEC championship game. And because of the seasons that both teams had coming into the game,
mm-hmm.
who is in line to play for the national championship.
So let me.
This is a number two versus number two Florida versus number five Tennessee on December 1st.
So let me walk through the normal Florida experience in 2001. So you're expecting to play this decisive game in week three. We've already set the table for that. You enter the season highly ranked. You start in a very sort of tradition. They were number one ranked.
Dipped shortly after that, but
They opened the season. This was very classic Steve Spurrier. We can't overemphasize this. They beat the crap out of Marshall and Louisiana Monroe. Then they're supposed to start the sort of real season after on that 9/11 week against Tennessee. They don't. Their next game is at Kentucky. For those of you listening who might be younger, this isn't the Kentucky that Mark Stoops made formidable. This is a bad football program. They win 44-10. Now we start to sort of cruise. They have a revenge game. You mentioned the SEC West thing.
Yes.
The year before, they had lost kind of a brain fart game and a bad defensive game for the Gators.
To a Sly Krum team?
2001 would have been Cheryl.
Okay, yeah.
They lose to Jackie Cheryl in Mississippi State, and then they get revenge on a ranked Mississippi State team by absolutely destroying them 52 to nothing. For those of you listening in the Magnolia State, you remember there was an incident with a ball boy or something that happened. Florida's ball boy got like hit by a Mississippi State player, and Spurrier apparently, well, he always ran the score up, but his excuse for running the score up that day had something to do with the ball boy. I don't know. This I might be showing my Ole Miss leanings here a little bit, which is rare. Then probably the biggest game of the season to that point, they go on the road to a nascent, a young, a flowering Nick Saban LSU.
Year two.
We're in year two.
Yes.
God knows enough ink and audio have been spilled about how Saban changed LSU, but that is not a thing yet. That is in media res, and the Gators dispatch them easily. 44-15.
A team that had just lost to Tennessee the week before, but had played them pretty close. They lost by 8 in Neyland. So it was in some ways like a good litmus.
You
got to
feel good about life.
Yes, yes.
Then you have the classic
I told you,
the SEC West brain fart or whatever you want to call it, in which Florida now should have played Tennessee by this point. We're heading to mid-October.
Yeah.
We're still considered their number one when they go to Auburn on the road.
Mm-hmm.
They lose on October 13th by 3 points in Jordan-Hare.
Yeah.
Still, sorry, Jordan-Hare.
Yeah.
Sorry. They are still somewhat in contention. You wouldn't necessarily know where they'd be. Would it be two losses against Tennessee?
No, this, yes, and this is
this
like
keeps
mid-October.
The thing alive, is what I'm getting at.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
Again, Georgia is not Georgia yet. I'm sorry.
It's a top 15 team.
They're Mark Richt on their way, Georgia.
If it really wants to make you confused, like this is a time of college football history when Florida owned the Georgia rivalry.
That's what I'm
just
saying.
Just absolutely owned it.
Oh, I mean, it was.
Even in good Georgia years, Florida owned
it. It was a foregone conclusion, and accordingly. Florida wins 24-10. They evaporate Vanderbilt. They beat a ranked South Carolina team. They beat the crap out of them too. And then now we're rounding out the season, Ryan.
Okay.
And we are going home to Ben Hill Griffin Stadium against number 20, the hated in-state rival. We got a lot of rivals to talk about.
Yes.
But there's three that we're going to talk about today that shape this story. It's actually why I wanted to kind of play around with you on this. Because this one might run long. You have a situation in which your prime rival in the 90s is sort of Florida State, but also Tennessee, right?
Yeah,
Tennessee's going to determine who's coming out.
They're rivals in different ways, and some of that has to do with the fact you play one in September and you play one at the end of the year.
Exactly, except you haven't played Tennessee yet, but here come the Seminoles. Talk to me about the Florida State game.
Okay, so the game itself, you look at and you're like, I don't know, why are we worried about this? Florida won this game 37-13, and the thing that sticks out about the Florida State game has nothing to do with any touchdown, any turnover, any of that. In the second quarter of this game, Florida's starting running back, Ernest Graham, is injured on a run-of-the-mill, I think it's a one-yard loss run. But in the pile, he says that Florida State defensive tackle. Ernest Graham says this, says that Florida State defensive tackle Darnell Dockett twisted his knee, and he heard something pop. So
a dirty sort of after the whistle,
yes,
100%, kind of in the pile.
Yes, that he deliberately twisted his knee.
All right.
And he ends up getting knocked out for that game, and I think for the next 3 to 5 weeks. So number one, we have already established that he's not going to play in the Tennessee game. And if they make it there, which, spoiler, they don't, he's not going to make it to the SEC championship game as well.
So the thing that you should know at this point on November 17th is you should, on the first week of December, be going... First off, you should have determined the East and West winners.
Yes.
And then you're going to go play in Atlanta.
Yes.
The SEC announces, and most leagues do this, not all, we'll get there in a second. December 1st is a weird, a truly weird asterisk of a day in college football history. Sorry, December 1st, 2001.
Yeah.
Because Tennessee and Florida have not played yet, but there are other games on the West side that have not been played to determine this. So they're just going to push everything back by a week, and then... Continue.
Okay. So, Florida, after the game, Florida is really mad. Steve Spurrier basically comes out and says, like, I don't know if Bobby Bowden is coaching his players to do this. There had been bad blood in this rivalry and sort of, like, similar allegations of Florida State plays dirty. A thing that... I'm going to back up. I'm going to expose a little bit of myself. A thing I didn't really realize until I left the state of Florida... was that outside of the state, I think people just look at, I learned that people looked at Florida and Florida State and were just like, they're basically the same. They're scummy and scammy and whatever. But at that time...
Which is more a referendum on the state of Florida, not the individual personalities 100%, 100%. Of the schools. Yeah.
But as much of a delightful hater as he was, like... It wasn't Steve Spurrier who sort of had the like, oh, you know... He's too lenient on his players. He runs a dirty program. That was Bobby Bowden's reputation in some circles, in some ways. And I'm not here to weigh in on that. So Steve Spurrier comes out and is basically like, you know, I don't know why we play this game. If it were up to me, we might not, but it's not my decision. I don't like how Bobby Bowden runs this team. Ernest Graham says he's thinking about suing Darnell Dockett for causing this injury to him.
Okay.
This is also one
this is
of
pretty serious.
This is also the time where, like, to really, man, we're doing so much remember when, but because this was not the, these were not the days of, like, true HD television, you can go back and watch this game in its entirety on YouTube. The visual fidelity is...
Grainy 4x3.
It's very hard to go back and look and say, like, if this game had happened now, I think we would have a much clearer picture, one way or the other, of what had happened in that pile. But it's kind of a question mark.
Any question. Today, they would have been able to actually, like...
Identify if something untoward had happened.
Yeah.
Separately in this game, Darnell Dockett is also accused of trying to stomp on Florida quarterback Rex Grossman's hand after the whistle. Like, there is a moment on the sideline where you see him, like, kind of stomp down.
Yeah.
And Rex Grossman's dad, because this was also the time, you know, this is also the same game where Ernest Graham gets hurt, is sort of like, hey, you know, this guy's out here trying to intentionally injure the opposition. Separately, there is a, I want to say a student journalist, I'm not 100% sure.
What, like the alligator?
At the alligator, who says that... She heard in the locker room Darnell Dockett saying, hey, did you guys see what I did to Ernest Graham?
Oh, Jesus.
He disputes that, and I'm not here to say whether or not this is true.
Wow.
Or not. But
Can't believe I'm going to say this, Ryan, but yeah. I kind of wish Twitter was around back then.
This was bad. This was like, very tense and caused a lot of distress, considering Florida won this game pretty easily.
Yeah.
Okay. So that brings us back. You know what? Before we get into it, because there's somehow still more to talk about, let's take a quick timeout, football term, and talk about our sponsor, Homefield. As we mentioned at the top of this episode, Phantom Island is brought to you by Homefield. And given the subject of this episode, I feel I would be remiss in not noting that I, Ryan Annie, a Florida grad, am married to a Tennessee fan. Our third date, in fact, was at a Florida-Tennessee game. Florida won, by the way. And so you might be thinking, like, oh, is he doing some sort of house divided thing here? Like, what's... No. What I'm here to tell you is that, to the contrary, Homefield Apparel is the house uniter. Because, thanks to the comfortable, stylish, wide variety of products offered by Homefield, gift giving has never been easier in my house. Oh, look. Here's some cool Lady Vols stuff that I can get for... My wife. Great. Here you go. Happy birthday. Merry Christmas. Oh, what to get Ryan for insert holiday or celebration here? Oh, look at that. Florida stuff from Homefield. Love you. Support you. Don't support your team. But we can exist outside of that particular rivalry for the rest of the year thanks to the healing, unifying power of home field. Will we ever buy Georgia anything? No. Have I bought Florida State stuff for other people? Regrettably, I have, because who knows? Like, maybe those receipts will leak one day, but it's not for me. I promise you that. It will never be for me. But it can be for others. That's the beauty of home field. It's not always about what's for you. It's about what's for the other people in your life. Don't they deserve to be comfortable even if you hate their football team? Even if you want their football team to lose constantly and fall before you at every conceivable opportunity? I say the answer is yes. And I say you go to homefieldapparel.com and you get excited for the Can't Miss Kickoff presented by Modelo, where home field is doing even more stuff than ever before. New items, just released blackout and whiteout jackets for a handful of teams. New hats on the way. We've got the tour coming up with all kinds of fun events at a number of games all across the United States. That's home field. Home field is bringing us together today to remind us that it doesn't matter that Tennessee shouldn't have beaten Florida in 2001. Tennessee fans still deserve comfy sweatshirts. At least some of them. Okay, back to the show.
Okay, I've taken some cleansing breaths, and I think I'm ready to talk about the Tennessee game now.
If you're a Florida State fan, you would have taken some, like, a cleansing smoke. They really do all smoke. All of them.
So.
A little Salem light.
So the other defining feature of the Florida-Tennessee rivalry at this point was that the stat that always got brought out, and I don't have the exact one on hand, was like the team that won the rushing battle won the game dating back to 19-dickety-dick. So,
which is not uncommon when good teams are playing each
100%.
Other. 100%. It is part of football.
And in many of these games, it was representative of like, oh, you know, if Florida jumped out to like a 20-point lead, they were going to start, like, even under Spurrier, it's like they were going to start running the ball.
Oh, definitely.
And on the other side.
Against Tennessee, they would. Yeah.
And on the other side, Tennessee was going to start throwing the ball because that's just sort of like the best example of this is in the 96 win, Florida outrushes Tennessee by 140 yards.
Okay.
Peyton Manning throws for 492 yards and almost gets them back into this is a game where they fell into a deep hole. And so it's like, is that a useful statistic? I don't know. When Tennessee won this game in 1998, they outrushed Florida by almost 170 yards. But like,
if this sounds weird to you, real fast, we're in the year 2001.
Yes,
Air Raid is still nascent.
Yes.
I think Leach just got hired at Texas Tech. Yes. 2000, he gets hired at Texas Tech.
Right.
So the idea of throwing the ball a lot is still synonymous with something not great happening, to bolster what you're saying.
Correct.
Time of possession as a stat line is kind of revered at this point.
Yeah.
So fun and gun, and I'm trying to help a modern audience understand.
Yeah.
Us talking about Spurrier throwing the ball a lot would not probably be received like we intend it to by a modern audience that has seen teams routinely go 60 pass attempts each, you know?
Yes. I mean, so Rex Grossman, Florida's quarterback, who is definitely the engine of the Florida offense at this point in time. Throws 259 passes this year, and that's seventh in FBS.
Workmanlike.
And if you jump ahead to 2025, that season hasn't happened, so let's jump ahead to 2024. Like, okay, where
who led the nation in pass attempts?
Yeah, like if now that doesn't even crack the top 20.
Yeah,
and some of that is that the schedule's expanded, whatever. But the point is that like, Rex Grossman was a high volume passing attack at the time, and it still is not as high volume as a lot of like normal passing attacks that we might see right now.
So we're walking around all this to say, you need a damn running back. You really need a damn running back.
So, all right, this is where I'll start to like undercut the premise here. So, spoiler alert, without Ernest Graham, their starting running back, Florida does not outrush Tennessee, and they don't beat Tennessee either. They play a very close game. Mm-hmm. Florida has the opportunity to tie the game with a 2-point conversion late, but they can't pull it off, and Tennessee wins in the swamp in December in this like really crushing loss.
Yep.
This like absolutely
Tennessee wins
gutting.
The East. This yes, game Tennessee, determines the East.
Yes, Tennessee wins the East.
Florida thought by many to still be a national title
yes.
Favorite to appear.
Aspirant. Yes.
Going to win the SEC, going to probably face
yes.
maybe Miami.
In newspaper coverage of this game, players talked about how like some Florida fans, the BCS championship this year was in the Rose Bowl. Some Florida fans had brought roses to yeah. the game, even though the SEC championship hasn't even been played. Like, yeah. but this was the last home game, and this
sure.
was a team that, like, even the Auburn loss, it's like, you know, nobody knows this going forward, but Florida's never had an undefeated season. They've won three national championships. They've lost a game every year. So, like, it's not there's not this idea of, like, that proves some sort of fatal flaw.
Sure.
That said, the bigger problem, if I'm being honest with Florida, is that they didn't stop Tennessee's rushing attack at all. Travis Stevens, like, ends up rushing for, I think, what at the time is the second most a Florida team has ever given up on the ground.
Damn.
Behind Herschel Walker.
Okay. And still only lost by two.
Yes, and this was a good defense. This is defense that had played really well all year. And, you know, again, you go back and read the old news coverage, and they're just sort of flummoxed. They're just sort of like, I don't know why we couldn't stop them on the ground.
Okay. One thing I want to point out
yeah.
is that we are not talking about the eventual SEC champion here.
No,
We know we're not talking about the national champion.
So, all right.
While this is happening.
So there is, despite all of this, because it's a close loss.
Yes.
There is this sentiment that starts to develop, at least with me. I'm not going to put it on other people.
Okay.
Of like, well, if we had played Tennessee when we were supposed to, September 15th, rather,
mm-hmm.
we would have won.
Yeah.
Because Ernest Graham would have been healthy. And we would have been able to do the things we need to do in offense. Might have been a close game, but like now that 2-point loss becomes a 2-point win, and now Florida's going to the SEC championship game.
Okay.
So incredible bitterness. So much bitterness, mm-hmm. at least with me, that I actually have no... I don't think I watched the SEC championship game this year.
Well, let me tell you what happens.
Okay.
Because it's just funny how things sort of combine and coincide to
yep.
create the historical narratives that we now think of as sort of...
fait accompli.
Yeah, because it's the exact opposite. Remember that in media res, how much Latin are we going to use today? LSU team that we talked about under
yes.
Nick Saban.
Yeah.
While this is happening on this weird December 1st, and yeah. again, to paint you a picture of how strange this day is, it's a collection of important rescheduled games, and then also not so important.
Sure.
Some
sure.
teams are just like, let's burn this thing off. We signed the contract. We got to
yeah.
pay this team. So... While the post 9/11 Army Navy game is going on,
yes.
which is supposed to be,
it's supposed to be a standalone game.
The intent there was that this thing's going to be standalone. All of these players are going to war now,
right?
Which is a massive fucking
yes.
deal.
Yeah,
because this has not occurred in our lifetimes yet. Our
right.
lifetimes,
right.
The 80s and 90s are coast through basically like. It's way more ceremonial, this
yeah,
concept.
Right.
It's also the last time Army wins before the Navy streak begins.
Oh wow!
Yeah, the very last time. So Army wins 26-17 in a game that not as many people
is not
considerably
getting
watch.
The, yes. Yeah.
And then you have a Clemson and Duke game, which doesn't
Oh, that's
matter.
Not even the weirdest. Like,
you have
okay, so
Georgia paying off its
yes.
homecoming game against Houston.
Georgia and Mississippi State, in your mind, you think they end – I know how they end the year. Georgia plays clean old-fashioned hate against
yep.
Georgia Tech. Mississippi State is one half of the Egg
Plays
Bowl.
Plays the Egg Bowl, yeah.
Mississippi State hosts number 10 BYU to end the season. And Georgia, you're right, plays Houston in the last week.
It's an incredibly weird. I was at one of these games that didn't mean anything because
yeah.
Ole Miss had its regular week 3 game against Vanderbilt. That's usually how they started SEC play.
Yeah.
Is moved to this post 9/11 December 1st slot. They beat Vanderbilt in sort of kind of a shootout, and it's in Oxford.
Yeah.
And people are kind of there. Finals are going on.
Yeah,
they
kind of right.
give a shit. But in Ole Miss's case, this is 2001. They've lost the Egg Bowl.
Right.
To a Mississippi State team that's about to go lose to BYU.
Yes.
They barely beat Vanderbilt. The blah of some
yeah.
of these games on December 1st can't be overstated. And yet, across the league, LSU and Auburn, not the Iron Bowl. Not
yeah.
Well, LSU doesn't really have a rival.
Yeah,
play,
sure.
The Iron Bowl is not being played. It's number 25. Auburn and number 22 LSU.
Yeah.
LSU wins 27-14 and backs into the SEC championship, in which young Nick Saban wins his first SEC title by beating that Tennessee team that beats y'all the following week.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, this all feels a little incongruent. It's a little weird.
It's disorienting.
Kind of, it's just kind of a bad fart to end the year in terms of, like, none of these SEC Titans, or so we think, are finishing the way we thought they would.
Right.
Except for the fact, 2 years later, LSU will be national champions and will be on to a completely different era in college football. We just didn't know it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can sort of see these shifts occurring on this one weird week. Meanwhile, in a game that has sort of been lost to time, Ryan, number one Miami scoots past Virginia Tech
by
2 points.
Not quite as close as that score suggests. Like, Virginia Tech, Virginia Tech did some Beamer ball to get back into this game. But
as
again,
they should. Go Hokies.
You know, one of the greatest college football teams of all time in the 0-1 Hurricanes, beating a three-loss Virginia Tech team by two is definitely closer than you would anticipate.
Okay, now we're going to get to the crux of this thing.
Okay.
Your belief then, as a as an undergraduate at the University of Florida, very much felt like, well, we should have gone to Atlanta. We beat the crap out of LSU this year, so we definitely feel like we would have won the rematch.
Yeah.
That logic doesn't always hold true, but let's just say it does this time, okay?
Here's a great reason it doesn't hold true. What actually happened in the SEC championship game?
What, LSU beating Tennessee?
LSU beats LSU. I believe.
Oh, that LSU team is you can see the Saban machine
starting to
being
form.
Built in progress from September to December that year.
That said,
that's year two for Saban.
Tennessee, I think, was a 17-point favorite in this game. They were up 17-10 at the half. So there is not a, and this is a game where I think early in the first, or late in the first half, rather, Nick Saban elects to go for a fourth and short from deep, like at his own 25 or something, at a time when failing to convert.
Yeah, it's heresy.
And especially at this point in time, it's like nobody was going for, you weren't going for fourth down hardly at all. Yeah. You certainly weren't doing it deep in your own territory.
Fireable offense.
And this is the other part of it. It's like, I will admit, with time and space, the gut punch of this must have felt so much worse for Tennessee fans than what I felt. Like, Florida,
because you cleared the hurdle of Florida.
Yes. You cleared the hurdle of Florida. You won in Gainesville.
Yeah.
You were facing a team you had already beaten, and you knew that, you knew what the path looked like.
But this is the changing of the guard, Ryan, because when I start as a student journalist 2 years later, like working in college media, college sports media, from up until now, the SEC West is the dominant brand in the SEC.
Yes.
And this is the moment in which those this sort of the
it
switch
starts
occurs.
To turn. Yeah, you can make an argument that like the
Meyer
years
still, but,
interrupt that. But,
you have LSU, you have Auburn's undefeated season in 04.
Yeah.
You have all of the Saban Alabama era. You have the various weird Auburn, you know, Chizik.
Sure, incarnations,
The West comes to define the league.
Yes.
And this is the year in which Tennessee, Florida, being the premier and marquee game in the East, two Eastern teams, all of this switches.
Yes.
Now, also, you said you didn't watch that game, so you
No. I I was just pissed. I mean, I think Florida fans were largely just pissed and felt, is it right that we felt robbed? No, it's total nonsense.
If you've listened this far along with Ryan and sort of tried to put yourself in his Gator Crocs, this is where I think you and I can both have a laugh at Ryan or any Gator's expense for bringing up 2001. Because while you were going through the front half of this show, I did a little research project.
Oh, and
the research project was,
you haven't told me about
read
this,
names
really
from the 2001 Miami roster until you don't know.
Okay,
when,
24
years later.
Yeah, right.
I just stopped.
Yeah.
This is one of the greatest college football teams.
Oh, it's a hugely stacked team.
The 2001 Miami Hurricanes: Willis McGahee, Najee Davenport, Andre Johnson, Jonathan Vilma.
Ed Reed,
the greatest safety to ever play the game. Roscoe Parrish, Jeremy Shockey, Bryant McKinney. We can just keep, I'm randomly picking positions at this point. Sean Taylor is maybe the second greatest safety, had he lived, in the history of football.
Mm-hmm.
Both the two greatest safeties, arguably, in football are on the same team together.
Mm-hmm.
Entrell Roll, Mike Rumpf, this is insane, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, Ken Dorsey played quarterback, but what are you going to do?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Clinton Portis, Frank Gore, and Jarrett Payton are the backfield. Jesus. Even I forgot. I remember watching this team and like, this is insane. Former Falcon, Martine Bilbla, by the way. Shout out. This is arguably one of the greatest teams in college football. I don't really know how to qualify those things, and I don't really like, that's not what I'm interested in sports media, but I don't need to run you through 2001 Miami too much, except to say that, like, it's essentially a functional war machine. There are some hiccups along the way. I think their closest margin of victory was the aforementioned win, again, rescheduled to December 1st against Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not an ACC game.
Correct.
I don't think Virginia Tech wasn't in the ACC. No, yet. They were in the Big East.
Well, so was Miami.
And Miami, no, sorry, Miami, they were both in the Big East. And the Big East, this is what I was trying to say. The Big East did not have a championship game.
Yes, that is correct. This is a time when it was, most conferences didn't have a conference championship.
The reason we focus so much on the SEC as it relates to Miami here. Like,
do you know what game they had rescheduled because of September 11th, this Miami team?
Virginia Tech.
No, that's not the game that moved. The game that moved.
They're one of the few teams that shuffles twice. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, their game, they were supposed to play Washington.
That's right.
Who, at the time they actually played them, was number 11.
The week before. Yes. They played number 15, number 11, number 14 leading into the national championship.
Yes.
Game. Yeah.
And here's how they did against them. They beat number 15 Syracuse 59-0. They beat number 11 Washington 65-7.
Brutal.
Like, you're right, there are some on here that are a little bit head scratchers, but like, when it was rolling, it was terrifyingly rolling.
The 18-7 win in Massachusetts over BC.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Yeah, it's cold.
Everybody got bored. Look. Sure. All right. We're not here to sort of debate the greatness of Miami. I'm here to
What Miami fans on the internet are for.
Absolutely. Just go to a vape shop anywhere south of Tampa. The point of this is, you are a Florida fan.
Yeah.
We've talked about the effect that this sort of, I always mispronounce this word, is it Pyrrhic victory that Florida State provides you because you lose your running back to apparently some acknowledged dirtiness, all right?
I would dispute that.
Heavily rumored dirtiness.
Yes, I think.
Alleged.
I think Florida State has always pushed back on this.
I need to remind you, I started the show by saying Phil Fulmer did 9/11.
And okay. I got to tell you, like, I don't bear Darnell Dockett any ill will.
That's good to know. I'll let him know.
Yeah.
So you have the Florida State, dynamic. You have the Tennessee dynamic, which I really feel like we've overhyped at this point, mainly to let the youth know this was a big rivalry.
Yeah.
You may have lost some luster in that regard, and also Georgia is not a thing yet and is very much a thing as we record this.
Yep.
But now your third sort of rival, and we're not going to go into the entire backstory here.
Yeah.
The shortest version is this, and I'll say this as a neutral party. Those of us in America who watched the U documentary that came out in 2009 sort of fell in love, if we hadn't already, with the brazen, cocky lawlessness that is Hurricane football. If you are from the state of Florida,
fatigues and
Right. I love every bit of it. Right. Two live crew and fucking just
real fuck you vibes.
It's just god. Yeah. Jimmy Johnson. No, I get Mike why Lervin. You're into it. If they didn't want me to run up that tunnel and point them guns, they shouldn't have put that tunnel there.
Sure.
I mean, that is gospel. Mm-hmm. But if you are from the state of Florida and you have a rooting interest in anything that isn't Miami, I can also understand how horrifically annoying this is and how terrible of a fan base this is. I'm setting something up here.
Okay.
Because Florida does not play Miami the way annually that Florida State and Miami play each other.
No, and Miami fans are happy to point this out all the time. Yes.
They are playing each other this year.
That's true.
So it is a rivalry. It's a sort of step removed from Florida State Miami.
Yes.
But now I have to ask, this is a long way of setting this up. You know the entire time, you may be frustrated as a Florida fan about what happens with Dockett or what happens in the Tennessee game or what doesn't happen in the SEC championship game. But there really isn't a universe in which you aren't all just fighting to play the bridesmaid, the runner-up.
I'll concede that.
Okay.
I at the same time, do you remember who Miami beats in the national championship that
year? The Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Do you know what Nebraska didn't do that year? They didn't win the conference championship.
Oh, they didn't. That's right.
They didn't even play.
That's right.
In the Big 12 championship
because the same day that Tennessee upsets Florida, Texas is losing to Colorado in the Big 12 championship game.
Yes, and before that,
God, you're right.
That's the same Colorado team that beats Nebraska 62-36
to keep Nebraska out of the Big 12 champion. I want to stop for a minute here.
Okay, take a breath.
We have Nebraska fans who listen to this show and other work that we do, and I feel like they're like, why is Nebraska constant? I'm sorry. Like, this is purely circumstantial.
If you read Death of the BCS by Dan Wetzel and, like, the three other guys that wrote it with him, this is, and I know I reference this book way too much, but this is maybe the first time that a significant amount of the nation looks around and is like, oh, the BCS may not be
functional. It's, yes, and it requires a lot of weird things. Like, it requires Florida to lose that. Number two, Florida loses to Tennessee. Mm-hmm. It requires Colorado, who is seventh, beating number three Texas in the Big 12 championship game, and it requires new number two Tennessee to lose to LSU. So it creates this weird, unclear assembly of teams to pick for the number two slot. Now, a couple of things. One,
yes,
for our Nebraska fans out there, what you did to Florida in the 1995 season was amazing. In that national championship game, if I haven't watched the 2001 SEC championship game ever, I'm certainly not going to watch the 95 national championship ever again. That said, there are two things I'm still mad about. Number one, I think Florida could have given Miami a better game than Nebraska did, because Nebraska trailed 34-0 at the half, and ultimately lost 37-14 in a real clunker of a BCS championship.
Well, I think didn't they pull everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like,
a freshman in there.
I think Florida had enough offensive firepower and was so effective using it and had the receiver talent that I think they could have given Miami a better game. I'm not going to say they beat that Miami team. I don't think they do.
Okay.
But I think it would have been more entertaining. My bigger bone to pick, and this is back to Nebraska again. Do you know who won the Heisman Trophy in 2000?
Yeah, Eric Crouch.
Eric Crouch. And I think that trophy should have gone. And I'll say this. Rex finishes second. I'm going to double check this right now. Yes, Rex Grossman finishes second for that Heisman Trophy that year. There are two reasons I think that happened. Number one, three reasons I'll give you. Number one, the Tennessee game. I think if Florida beats Tennessee and plays for the SEC championship and maybe wins the SEC championship, I think that becomes an easy conversation of, well, this quarterback took his team to the conference championship game and maybe won it, and this one didn't even make it there. Number two, I think Eric Crouch was like, well, he's been so important to college football for so long, blah, 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 blah. I'm not really interested in that part of it. But the bigger thing that, again, will remind people that college football used to be very different. Rex Grossman was a sophomore.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, we just couldn't give the Heisman Trophy to an underclassman.
Hadn't happened.
They'd be spoiled. They wouldn't want to go to classes their junior and senior years. Now,
you give it all to them, there's no telling what they might do.
It is kind of amazing how much that tenet, which was so important to the Rex is not necessarily even the most egregious example of this, but for so many years, it was so important that you had to be a junior or senior to win the Heisman Trophy.
Because the Heisman is the dumbest trophy in sports.
But isn't it? I know, but we're not going to, listen, we're making you less grumpy, so we're not going to go down that road.
We're not going to talk about the Heisman ever.
Isn't it interesting that the second we sort of broke the seal on that, it just disappeared. It stopped being important.
Yeah, because
it had been important for decades.
Because it was a scab that wouldn't release itself.
Yeah.
It's one of many logical fallacies that help build the entire idea of the Heisman, like the myth of the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
by the way, in a couple of years, Jason White wins the fucking Heisman Trophy.
Sure.
Ruddy white dudes at like helmet schools.
Yeah, but
are
Jason
dominating.
White, you know what? Jason White put up some numbers. I'll give him that.
Yeah,
least.
On
and
two
I think
42
year
old knees. No, it's because he beats Eli.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
It was the first Heisman race I had ever covered as a journalist. And so I was like, oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, 2003.
I was like, this is big dumb.
Wins it in. But I'll give Jason White this. He threw 40 touchdowns. Do you know how many touchdowns Eric Crouch threw? And I understand it was a different offense and they're not throwing the ball at the same amount. Do you know how many touchdowns Eric Crouch threw his Heisman Trophy year?
Nebraska, for like six?
Seven!
Ah,
seven!
Shit!
Seven touchdowns!
Damn it, I hate it when the joke's right.
So, That's if I have lingering bitterness.
It's to Nebraska.
It's that.
We spent 45 minutes to get to you like being angry at Nebraska.
Yes. It's that Osama bin Laden handed Eric Crouch the Heisman Trophy.
I'm good.
Phantom Island is produced by Michael Serber and presented by Homefield. Our theme music by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard comes from the song Phantom Island from their album of the same name. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.